Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday afternoon. Senator John McCain has a new book, and it is titled 13 Soldiers, A Personal History of Americans at War. Senator McCain has said about this book that it recalls the experiences of a single American soldier, sailor, airman, or marine in each of the 13 major wars our country has fought. And it's representing all four branches of the armed services. As he says, the experience of war can vary from one service to another, although many sensations and situations are common to all. The stories are captivating and riveting, and some of them very, very troubling. And really, it's just a great book. It's always, I think, important to experience war through the eyes of somebody who has fought it. And Senator McCain, of course, has done just that. He's going to be chair of the Senate Armed Services Committee come January. This is his sixth book, published on Veterans Day. Senator McCain served in the U.S. Navy from 1954 to 1981, elected to the U.S. House in 1982, the Senate in 1986, and, of course, was Republican presidential candidate in 2008. He spent 5.5 years in captivity in North Vietnam, and nearly, it's hard to imagine this, 3 years in solitary confinement. We'll be welcoming phone calls for him. He's with us the first half of the hour. The second half, his longtime aide who has written other books with him, Mark Salter, will be with us. And Mark has a story about his father in the war that's overlooked, I think, the Korean War. A remarkable story about his father as well. Senator John McCain, welcome to the Midwest, sir. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Kathleen, and I'm glad to be with you, and it's a pleasure always to be back with a show like yours, which is certainly well attended for in a lot of parts of the Midwest.
Thank you very much. I really like the format of this book, Senator McCain, because sometimes we talk about wars and we neglect the people who fight the wars, and each of these stories is so compelling. It's a good way to learn history, and you learn it through the eyes and experiences of somebody who's gone through the experience. I like that.
Well, thank you. And you know, one of the things about history that a lot of particularly young people find it rather dry and somewhat boring, and what, among other things, Mark and I try to do here is put a face and a human being and the understanding of the real trials and challenges that men and women who serve our country go through. And in the context of the conflict, you mentioned Mark Salter's father, and I know he'll talk with you a lot more about it, but people don't understand what it was like for Pete Salter and Mitchell Red Cloud to have only summer uniforms in freezing cold weather in North Korea. I mean, you know, it and what it was like for Joseph Plum Martin, Revolutionary War soldier, how he almost starved to death, while thousands did die in Valley Forge in that terrible winter, as you know. And through the eyes of Joseph Plum Martin, it comes much more alive to us. And Charles Black, the African-American who fought and sacrificed and unfortunately many years later was badly beaten in a race riot. We think by putting a human face and human experiences of ordinary citizens in conflict, at least to some of my family members and others who have read it, it makes history a lot more understandable.
Yeah, it sure does. Well, let's spend some more time with Joseph Plum Martin, because your book starts so dramatically with this 15-year-old kid. He's just a kid, and he's going to sign his name, and he's obviously not quite sure he wants to do this, and then he finally does do it. And, oh my gosh, the experiences he had. And he went on to fight for the whole length of the Revolutionary War, didn't he?
Yes, and you know, it's interesting, because years later he wrote a depiction of his own experiences. We basically are repeating his tale, and you know, there's a couple of things that stand out about Joseph Plum Martin. One is the incredibly harsh conditions just staying alive for this Revolutionary Army. He almost starved to death on several occasions, and of course we all know in Valley Forge that the people that died that winter by the thousands. And I think the other thing about him that also got my attention from his memoirs. Did you know that it was 30 years after the Revolutionary War before Congress finally voted for a pension for these these people? You know, it's really you know, I was stunned when I frankly when I read about that. I think I know a lot of history, but again, here's a guy, and he was in a couple of the major conflicts that they had with the British, and he talks about Lafayette, he talks about General Washington, and it's a remarkable memoir, and I think symptomatic of that war, where literally they fought the enemy, but they also fought off a threat to their very survival because of the lack of food and clothing.
Yeah. Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., another remarkable story, and so moving when his father, who's a pretty well-known guy himself, thinks that his son is severely wounded or might be dead and goes on this journey to find him. And here's a Harvard guy, the son, who's been wounded badly in at least three different instances, and his father sets out to find him.
It's you know, in this day and age when we can immediately identify people, and as he called it, it was called then the butcher's bill of the slaughter of that conflict. You know, again, a lot of us don't or can't recollect the carnage of the Civil War. The greatest carnage of any war we were ever engaged in was our own Civil War, the bloodiest. And here's a young man who's the son of a very famous author and intellectual, and he joins this, quote, Harvard regiment, which is half Harvard graduates and students and half German-speaking recruits who don't even speak the English language, an interesting combination. They're recent immigrants. And so what he goes through is incredible, but also that part, his father, embarking, travels down to Virginia, roams the battlefields, asking people for if there's any news of his son. I mean, can you imagine father having to go through that? And then, of course, one of my favorite anecdotes about Oliver Wendell Holmes is that for the rest of his life, even as a member of the United States Supreme Court, he carried his lunch to work in an ammunition box that was from the, you know, that we carried ammunition in during battle to always remind him of the transition and the trauma of war. And by the way, he gave a couple of very excellent speeches in later years that is really a wonderful depiction of the transformation and the imprint that kind of experience makes on a person's life. It was very beautifully done.
Mm. Here's a guy who could have had his lunch on a silver platter, probably, right?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. There's something about that war, too. I'm a huge fan of Abraham Lincoln's. I just think that was an extraordinary president. You ran for president, too. You must have thought and read a lot about what this man faced to have this horrendous war, brother against brother, on our soil, and so many tens of thousands of people dying. I mean, it's just what a time in American history. What a world he walked into.
Yeah, and you know also that I guess you would look back and that it took that war to define what country we were going to be like, free or slave. And, you know, some revisionist historians for a while said about states' rights and a lot of that, and I respect that view. But it really was about a nation that was going to allow the outrageous practice of slavery. Now, I say that with honestly, in all candor, I had forebears who were Southerners who owned slaves. So, in interest of full disclosure, and also then it was modern weaponry against a traditional kind of battle where they literally faced each other, and with the weapons that they then were able to develop, the slaughter in these charges, actually it was a prelude to what happened in World War One.
I was just thinking about that.
People charged the machine guns, and basically that's what they were doing in our Civil War. And you know, it when you think, like you just said, look, a bunch of these guys had gone to West Point together that were fighting against each other. You know, it's hard to it's hard to imagine sending in your troops to kill maybe your classmate.
Yeah,
it's hard to imagine.
Well, let's. I've heard you say that you think we all should read one of the best war books ever written, "All Quiet on the Western Front,"
yes,
written in the late 1920s about World War I, in which these very profound questions. Let's just get to philosophical here for a moment, because how can you not? Are asked about. You know, I've killed somebody. Here's my comrade who has a mother who cared about him as much as my mother cared about me. I'm sure you've had these kinds of thoughts go through your mind during the number of years you were a POW or the number of years you were with the Navy. Why can't we realize that that's true and that we need to somehow figure out a way to keep the 14th war from happening?
Well, I think that is a question that has confronted anyone who thinks about civilization and the Western standards and our fundamental philosophies of liberty, freedom, probably best articulated in the French Revolution, which obviously went in the wrong direction, at least for a period of time. The thought that all of us, and as articulated by our founding fathers, are created equal, but we fight to maintain those rights. But also, there's a glamorization of war that, Kathleen, that is also seems to play a role. Europe, as you know, had been quiet with only minor wars ever since the end of Napoleon Bonaparte, and so when the crisis began, and I recommend to anyone Barbara Tuchman's Guns of August to understand it. Then everybody, it was glorious. It was wonderful. We were going to, you know, make the world safe for democracy, blah, 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 you know, on and on and on. And it was on both sides. God is with us,
right.
Both sides. And there was this glamorization and of the heroism, and it ended up, of course, wiping out a generation. A generation of young men, British, French, German, other countries as well. And I know that you and I agree. World War II was a direct result of World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that we need to understand that the consequences, not only of action, but fail to act. Right now I see this radical Islam spreading throughout the Middle East. And I'm not saying we need to do anything militarily, but I am saying we have to understand the threat that this poses to not just that part of the world, but the entire world, because this radical brand of Islam, these people had just announced a couple of weeks ago that enslavement of women was in keeping with Sharia law.
Right.
I mean, this is something that we're going to have to confront, and it isn't necessarily on the battlefield, but obviously somebody who believes that isn't subject to the liberal ideas that are the fundamentals of our society.
And do we
getting a little deep here?
Deep subject. And do from all of the history that you know, and from all of these 13 wars, have we learned anything that we should carry with us in the fight against ISIS?
I think we have learned that we have to lay the groundwork for a prevention of those conflicts before they reach a point where they're inevitable. For example, I think in the Arab Spring that we might have played a greater role in some of these countries, for example, like Libya, that is now deteriorated into a chaotic situation. In Egypt, I'm very concerned that it's gone back to a Mubarak-style government or worse. And all of it seems to have been a breeding ground for this brand of radical Islam. I think we have to, I know this sounds strange coming from me, but the economic, political, and educational side of these conflicts is probably more important than providing everybody with arms.
That's interesting. Yes, I do. Yes, I do see your point. Senator John McCain is our guest. He's with us for the first half hour, and we will have time to take a couple phone calls. If you'd like to join us, we'd like to hear from you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The book, and a fine one it is, and thought-provoking, and the stories are highly interesting. 13 Soldiers, It's a Personal History of Americans at War, which means it covers 13 different soldiers for 13 different wars. We'll probably hear from some vets, Senator McCain, but you write in the intro to the book, and take this in terms of your experience or all of the people you've written about, no other experience will ever surpass its effect on their lives, and they can never forget it. No other experience, really?
The birth of a child, the death of a parent, and sometimes, and those are the most joyful and most sad, the death of a loved one and the birth of a child, and yet those are sometimes in wrapped up into one on the battlefield. The death of a comrade, escaping a narrow escape from death in oneself, it's the highest and most intense experience one can have, to be in an actual battle. And by the way, Kathleen, I know that we have a lot to talk about, but I think it's worth mentioning two aspects of this. One is we have two women who served in combat, one in the Gulf and one in Afghanistan, Mary Rose and Monica Lynn Brown. Both of them served courageously. Monica Lynn Brown was a medic who, an IED went off, she rushed right in. You know, they're unarmed, but you know, in the war we were talking about, in the Civil War, roughly 10-15% of those wounded lived. Now 90%, thanks to the kind of training and courage of our medics, such as Monica Lynn Brown. And the other I just wanted to mention was Charles Black in the War of 1812 that,
yes,
I mentioned.
Fascinating story.
And also Edward Baker, another African-American who served in the Spanish-American War and was at San Juan Hill. And little-known fact that his African-American regiment relieved a lot of pressure and may have been responsible for the survival of the Rough Riders, Teddy Roosevelt's Rough Riders at San Juan Hill, that got a whole lot of the publicity. And so we've had contributions from rich, poor, intellectuals, women, men, and we try to wrap them all together. By the way, Monica Lynn Brown should put to rest any question about whether women can serve in combat or not.
Mm-hmm. And Charles Black's story was interesting. I didn't realize that, 15-20% of the Navy was African American in the War of 1812.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about that was, because every member, crew member, is vital to the lives and safety of every other crew member, these individuals who are African American were on a position of equality with their shipmates, because they had to rely on them for their very lives. There's a magnificent painting in the Capitol of the Battle of Lake Erie, and I won't bother with the details, but Commodore Perry is being rowed in a boat and the over to another ship because his ship was sunk. And if you look carefully, one of the people rowing is an African American. So they contributed enormously and have throughout our history. Listen, Arizona, one of our wonderful heritages is our Buffalo soldiers who were down at Fort Huachuca served in the Indian Wars. They did with great distinction, and Harry Truman will, for many reasons, earn a historic place in history as a great president, but one of them was his edict that the armed services would integrate.
Mm-hmm. You do know your history, sir, don't you? That's good. Let's go to Barbara. We have a couple callers for you. Barbara in Wapaka.
Sure.
Hi, Barbara.
Hello. It's an honor to speak to both of you. I love your program, Kathleen, and I'm very happy to speak to Senator McCain. My question is, I think the book Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court by Mark Twain has a lot to say about the kinds of wars we were having today with more industrialized or democracies, republics, governments with more citizen input versus contrasted to more tribal societies. And I just wondered what Senator McCain's thoughts would be about the kinds of battles we're fighting in, why, you know, how the societies, the difference of societies might account for the inability to maintain a society after the our battle, you know, our troops leave.
Well, thank you, Barbara. Very quickly, I'd like to make 2 points. One is we now have an all-volunteer army, and that's good in the respect that they are the best professionals probably we've ever had. But the downside of that, in my view, is that we ask a small number of our society to go out and fight our wars. And that doesn't mean I'm saying go back to the draft, but I am saying let's all volunteer and do something anyway for our country. And I guess my second point is what concerns me about modern wars to some degree is the objectivity, which then leads, I think, to a more motivation to use a weapon such as a drone that will fire a missile and kill people while we watch it on a screen.
Mm-hmm.
That to me can, I may be wrong, but I think it's when it's that impersonal and without and absolutely on the cheap, then the willingness or desire to use those weapons is probably greater than if you put one of our men and women in harm's way. You see my point,
mm-hmm.
Kathleen?
Yeah, I definitely see your point. And you have to be very, very careful that you got the right target, right?
Right.
Yeah. Thanks, Barbara. Max in Milwaukee. Hi, Max.
Hello. First off, thank you for having me on the show, and also it's an honor to speak to you, Senator McCain. I'm also a Navy veteran. I'm on the USS Virginia. Just my quick question is, have you noticed an improvement at all with the VA health care since it's been brought into light of maybe improper treatment of combat veterans or just any veteran in general?
Max, thanks for serving, and I'm so glad that we honor you and other veterans for their service. I'd like to tell you that I have seen an improvement, but I wouldn't be telling you the truth. We passed legislation that we hope is a beginning, and it's only a beginning. As you know, it's shameful what we've found out as far as the needless deaths and lack of care for our veterans. We did pass legislation I think would put us on the right path, but the Inspector General report shows systemic and fundamental problems within the Veterans Administration. I promise you that we will keep as close an eye through hearings and oversight as we possibly can. But I can't tell you that there's been any real changes yet. I'm hoping that very soon there will be, such as this choice card and other measures, and some people need to be fired, which hasn't happened. But we'll stay on it. It's a tragedy what happened here, 50 veterans dying because they were on some kind of phantom waiting list and didn't get care. But maybe in the long run, we will arouse the nation to fix this problem.
It seems to have been a problem for us for a long time, doesn't it, Senator McCain? And if anybody should be served royally, like royalty, it should be veterans when they return. And we don't do that in this society. I don't get it.
Kathleen, I think the good news is we honor them. Last Veterans Day, every town, every city, no matter where you are, we honored our veterans. When I see them in an airport, I go over and say thanks for serving, and so do many of our citizens. So that part is good. The health care side is it's unacceptable in the word. It's a stain on our honor, on our national honor.
Yeah. Senator McCain, we'll let you go. I know you're a busy man. Thank you so much for being with us, and thanks for doing this book. It's a good one. It's really a good one.
Thanks. Thank you for having me on, Kathleen, and Mark will do a better job than I did.
I don't think that's true. It's nice of you to say that, but it's not true. But I'm sure he'll do a great job. Senator John McCain, a co-author of 13 Soldiers, A Personal History of Americans at War. And we will continue with his co-author, Mark Salter. And Mark's father is one of the 13 soldiers at war who's featured in this book. His father was in the Korean War, and suffered the coldest night that anybody can imagine, and he will be with us to talk about the Korean War and many of the other soldiers we didn't have a chance to talk about with Senator McCain. Mark has worked with Senator McCain on many of his other books, including Faith of My Fathers, and served on McCain's staff for 18 years. So we'll be welcoming phone calls for him and hearing more stories as we carry on. We do want to let you know, because we were talking a little bit about Ferguson, the first part of our show, that this is what the Post, Washington Post, is reporting. A grand jury has reached a decision on whether to indict Darren Wilson, the Ferguson, Missouri police officer whose fatal shooting of Michael Brown sparked days of turbulent protests. News conferences are being prepared by the county prosecutor's office and the Missouri governor, and those news conferences will likely come later today. I'm sure there'll be news at 3 o'clock on this from National Public Radio. Mark is joining us momentarily, and you can join the conversation as well. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mark Salter is co-author with John McCain of 13 Soldiers. He's authored other books with the senator and has served, as I said, on his staff for 18 years. Mark Salter, thank you very much for being with us. Good afternoon.
It's great to be on. Thank you.
And let's start with a war that I don't think we study very much, and your father served in it. Oh, my goodness, mm-hmm. Did he have some difficult times. And he's a very, very interesting man as well, isn't mm-hmm. he, Mark?
Yes, he was, and it's the Korean War you're referring to, and it was, you're right, it really doesn't get the attention that it deserves. The first 8 months or so of U.S. involvement in Korea was really about as tough an experience as we've had in any war.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a disaster in a lot of ways. It was after World War II. We had cut the defense budget. Most of the troops were green. They were on occupation duty in Japan and Okinawa. And, they were ill-equipped. We were caught by surprise. The North Korean invasion of South Korea caught us by surprise. General MacArthur ordered a very small force called Task Force Smith to Korea to put on, quote, an arrogant display of force. Where they faced North Korean Soviet tanks that the North Koreans had, and were badly outnumbered and were just destroyed. And the commanding general of the Eighth Army was taken prisoner. It was just a disaster. By the time my dad's unit got there, which was very early, he was in the 19th Regiment of the 24th Infantry Division, Company E. They set up a perimeter, what's called the Pusan Perimeter, where they slugged it out for weeks with the North Koreans, and it was a very near-run thing. Had they not been able to hold that perimeter, they would have been pushed into the sea and annihilated. They fought it until MacArthur's brilliant stroke of the Marines landing at Incheon turned the war around. The Marines headed west, and the 24th Infantry, the 8th Army, ran north. They were the hammer to the Marines' anvil. There were elements of U.S. forces and South Korean forces on the Yalu River, the border of China. They had liberated Seoul. They had captured Pyongyang, the capital of North Korea, and then made it all the way to the border to the Chinese border, where they started fighting, encountering Chinese units in the north. At the same time, the General MacArthur was assuring President Truman that there were no Chinese or no large numbers of Chinese in Korea. My dad's unit had fought them for days.
Mm-hmm.
On the 5th of November in 1950, his company was on a dug in on a hill designated 123 north of the Cheongchon River in North Korea. They had fought the night before. They had fought Chinese the night before. On that night, they were overrun by a Chinese battalion and virtually annihilated. I think 20 original members of the company survived.
Oh, my gosh.
And my dad was one of them. The Chinese knocked them all south of the Cheongchon River. MacArthur and MacArthur's G2, the intelligence, didn't believe that the Chinese were there in force. They had the commanding general of the 8th Army, William Walker, ordered a Thanksgiving offensive where they were going to go back up towards the border with China, and that's when the Chinese came in and by the millions.
Yeah.
And not knock the Americans all the way south of Seoul to Osan, where we sort of collected ourselves and fought a stalemate for the next 3 years. But these were battles. The Americans were in summer uniforms with summer boots, very little to eat, never enough ammunition. The temperatures were below zero, howling winds out of Siberia.
Yeah.
They were just a miserable, awful experience, and really very little about it is known anymore in this country, and that's a shame.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you included your dad in the book and were able to do so. And you talk about the cold. I mean, this was a Minnesota kid, right, who's used to probably below zero.
Iowa kid.
Went to school in Minnesota for a while, but had experienced cold, but that he remembered the cold never being as cold as he was there.
Never as cold and never as hungry. He never ate rice the rest of his life.
Goodness.
He told stories of how he'd had for something to eat. They would mix coffee grounds with rice, and that he said he'd never forgot the cold.
Mm. Your dad had so many interesting things going on. Some of them were pretty dramatic and terrible. He was on his way to Fort Riley, Kansas, after completing basic training, and he was hitchhiking, and he got picked up by three bad dudes.
Yeah, three AWOL soldiers who hit him over the back of the head with a sap or a piece of metal pipe or something, and took his wallet. And then my dad was sort of semi-conscious, and he said he heard one of them say "pull, pull," and they were out in the country. It's a turn here, and we'll finish him off. And my dad, said that the still had the presence of mind to open up the car door and hurl himself out of the car while it was rolling and kind of run into a cornfield where he collapsed. He had 1950 was a rough year for him.
Yeah. And he went to school with Marlon Brando?
He did, yeah. Shattuck Military Academy in Faribault, Minnesota.
Huh.
And Marlon Brando, it was the kind of school where some of the kids, it's kind of a last chance school for some kids where they went to school after they got kicked out of other high schools. Marlon Brando actually managed to get kicked out of the military school.
Let's go. We didn't have a chance with Senator McCain to talk about a lot of these people, and we certainly want to cover World War II.
Mm-hmm.
He's an interesting man, as brave as any Marine on Saipan during World War II and much more enterprising. Guy, how do you pronounce his last name?
Gabaldon. Mm-hmm.
How did you find him, and what did he do?
Oh, I'd seen something years ago, and John had remembered something about him. But he was—they had made a movie about this guy's exploits. He was a little, I think, something like 5'4", short little guy, Mexican American, grew up in East L.A., was friends with in a very ethnically diverse neighborhood than East L.A., and he was best friends with a lot of Japanese American kids, and it was they practically lived with one Japanese American family, so he could speak a little Japanese, a little street Japanese.
Yeah.
And he was on Saipan, and it was his first combat. And I think the battle that had preceded Saipan, they were clearing the Marianas, the Mariana Islands, and Tarawa had preceded it, and the Japanese had virtually fought on Tarawa to the last man. And it was, really costly. So, they expected worse on Saipan. And I think his first night there, he wandered off, he hit the beach and the Marines and, fought during the day. And then that night he sort of wandered off on his own and, saw some Japanese soldiers, and he heard them in a cave and sort of pretended that he was outside the cave with more than just himself, and spoke in the kind of street Japanese, convinced him to come out and surrender. And he got chewed out. He got chewed out for it by his CO. Don't you ever do anything like that again. And the next night he went out and did it again and brought in more guys. And so finally the CO said, okay, go out there. You're a lone wolf, but go. And he ended up, some people credit him with convincing as many as 1,500 Japanese soldiers and Japanese civilians who were also on Saipan to surrender. There were instances in the Battle of Saipan on one end of the island that they called Suicide Cliffs, where soldiers and civilians were just hurdling themselves off the cliff and committing suicide rather than surrender.
Goodness.
So it was really it was, he was insubordinate, but a very enterprising young man. And the funny thing about the movie was they had a an actor named Jeffrey Hunter play him, who was blue-eyed and about 6'2". But so they turned Gabaldon and they claimed he was Italian in the movie and not a Chicano, as he was.
Yeah. We welcome phone calls for you as well. Mark Salter, the co-author of 13 Soldiers, A Personal History of Americans at War, is our guest. He's written many other books with Senator John McCain and was on his staff for some 18 years. So there are a lot of other wars we haven't covered. Take your pick, the ones we haven't. We'll be happy to talk about those. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. We're on Facebook as well. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and so that's that. Let's go to Anthony in La Crosse. Hi, Anthony.
Hello. Hello, you guys. Hello, Mr. Salter. Thank you so much for authoring this book with Senator McCain.
Go right ahead, Anthony.
I heard Senator McCain mention Mr. McLeod, my father. My hometown is Black River Falls. My father was born in April of 1934, and he knew personally the Corporal Red Cloud, the Medal of Honor winner. My great aunt Harriet wrote for the Banner Journal. Corporal Mitchell Red Cloud, their father or uncle, wrote the Indian Report in the Banner Journal.
Oh.
And then they both played together on what was then called the Indian Mission of the Ho-Chunk people. And so he would have been about 10 years my father's senior. But I don't know if he's one of the 13 men mentioned. But everyone up in Black River Falls is very proud of that man, both white and native. So.
Oh, he's featured in the story.
Yes, he's featured. My father could almost never mention Corporal Red Cloud's name without breaking down. He saved his life. One of the most vivid memories I have in my childhood is going to, I think it was then, it was then called the Winnebago Reservation, now the Ho-Chunk Reservation, and he took us to Red Cloud's grave.
Did he?
Yes. The story my father told of that was he was the first guy. He was the most experienced and one of the few experienced guys in the company. He had been a Marine in World War II, Red Cloud. And he was the Browning guy, the automatic weapon guy. And so he was the first guy to hear the Chinese. And he was shot in the chest pretty early on in the battle, and rather than evacuate or try to evacuate, he had my father and another guy use web belts to kind of wrap around him in a tree, and he rested his Browning in the crotch of a tree, and with another guy, Private First Class Mitch Balboni, they opened up a draw down the hill for my father and a few others to escape, and gave his life. And the next day when they went back up the hill, there were just scores of dead Chinese in front of Red Cloud. It was won the Medal of Honor, and as I said, my dad spoke with the utmost reverence all his life.
Thank you so much, Anthony, for your call. I'm glad you
called.
Thank
you, Anthony, for calling in.
Yeah. Susan sent us this email. We talked a little bit with Senator McCain about veterans and how we treat them. I'd like for you to put this in a historical perspective, if you would, Mark. She says, I've worked with many vets as a healthcare chaplain, and I see Vietnam veterans really struggling. How can we best help them?
You know, I'm probably not the best person people say that. I mean, we've given a name to these things now that we never had before, or they might have called it, battle fatigue and wars past. It's now called, post-traumatic stress syndrome. But, the best people to help veterans that are struggling are other veterans. I'm not another veteran, but there's nothing they should lack for in terms of resources and understanding from the rest of us for whom they've sacrificed so much.
Right. Let's go to Vietnam. We didn't talk to Senator McCain about Vietnam. You chose quite a remarkable man from Vietnam.
Yeah. Yeah, Leo Thorsness, who was in prison with the senator, and that's why John wanted to write about him. He you know, we didn't really give an account of his time in prison. He was, John was actually in a cell with him in the latter part of the their captivity. We didn't really write about that. We wrote about this dogfight he was in, where it was just, he was a wild weasel. And what the wild weasels did was fly in and sort of really as bait. They would sort of draw the attention of the Vietnamese anti-aircraft fire and surface-to-air missile fire and try to suppress it, try to take out the SAM sites and, for the bombing formations that would follow them. It was very, very dangerous work, probably the most dangerous flying assignment in the war. And he was about as good a wild weasel pilot as there was. On one particular day, he got into one of the most famous, really, dogfights. I think somebody had likened it as it was the day Leo Thorsen took on the entire North Vietnamese military. He took out several SAM sites, got in a dogfight with a couple of MiGs. It was just epic. It started to run out of fuel. Mm. His wingman was shot down. He was trying to circle overhead until a rescue aircraft got there. Ran out of fuel, flew to the refueling flight over Laos, plane over Laos, got fuel, went back when he shouldn't have, didn't have to, got into another dogfight, was out of ammunition, and just sort of got a MiG to chase him rather than strafe the rescue planes. Just an epic performance. Was low on fuel again, heard from another pilot that he was about out of fuel, so he gave up his spot in the line, you know, sort of his priority spot to get fuel, and glided into Thailand and hit the runway with bingo fuel, zero fuel, and just a really spectacular long hours of aerial combat, right. And for which he got the Medal of Honor. And I think just a couple of weeks later, he was shot down himself and taken prisoner.
Mm. Did Senator McCain, or does he with you now, talk at all about Vietnam and his experience as a POW, or does he guard that pretty closely?
Well, you know, we did the very first book we did in 1999 was called Faith in My Father's. Right. It's all about it's about his naval career, and it's about his father and grandfather's naval career. But a big, big part of the book is about his time in prison. And he did speak to me at length in sort of an interview fashion, a Q&A. I would come up with questions, and he would answer them, and he would, you know, he wouldn't. Sometimes I would have to press him for a little bit more than he gave me, but, you know, he was pretty he elaborated. But for this book, no. And normally he doesn't. And when he does talk about it, he talks about stuff that's to him funny, mm-hmm. you know, jokes, you know, they would tell each other in prison. And, you know, he never talks about torture or anything like that.
Mm. And I heard him say at one point that there is scarcely a day that goes by that he doesn't hear from one of his fellow vets. Is that true? They're in touch.
The ex-POWs are a pretty close bunch. You know, they have dinner. There's a Vietnamese restaurant here in Northern Virginia where I live that lots of them in the area have dinner at quite often, and they stay in touch.
Hmm. More phone calls for you in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. Mark Salter is the co-author of the book with Senator McCain, with whom he's worked for 18 years, 13 Soldiers, A Personal History of Americans at War. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are welcoming more phone calls. Mark Salter is our guest now, and let's go to Jeannie in Green Bay. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I've talked to a number of young men. They're joining the Army for Adventure. And someone told me, I don't know where he got his information. In the Middle East, a lot of money. Some of these people have nothing to do. They want adventures. So they get involved. Is that true?
You mean sort of mercenaries or soldiers of fortune? Or are you talking about people who fight on our side, or who?
Well, some of the young men in the United States are joining for adventure.
Just joining the Army for adventure.
Well, You know, lots over the years, and in fact, one chapter, our war in Mexico, we sort of address that, where it's about a guy named Sam Chamberlain who did indeed join the U.S. cavalry and fight in Mexico for the adventure of it. Young people serve for a host of reasons. Many of them selfless and patriotic, and some, you know, out of a sense of adventure or to test themselves in a great crucible. But they sure don't do it for the pay, which is, you know, pretty lousy.
Let's talk about the woman. We spoke with Senator McCain about the other woman from Afghanistan. The Persian Gulf War, the largest single deployment of women to a combat zone in American history.
Her name is Mary Rhodes. She was part of an Army Reserve unit based in western Pennsylvania, in sort of the old steel towns of western Pennsylvania, made up of mostly young men and women from that part of Pennsylvania. It was called the 14th Quartermaster Detachment, and their job was water purification. And they shipped out to Saudi to do that work, to purify water for the troops. They weren't in Kuwait where the fight. You remember, it was a four-day ground war, a much longer air campaign, obviously, but the ground war only lasted 4 days. And before they ever got to Kuwait to do their work, they were near Dhahran Air Force Base in Saudi Arabia, and they were sort of bivouacked in a big metal aluminum warehouse thing. Mary had just left at their barracks to go to a PX at the Air Force Base, and when a Scud missile, the only one that ever really did any serious damage to us, scored a direct hit. It was the last Scud attack of the war, I think. It was the last night of the war, the last night of the ground war. It wasn't even targeted at this warehouse. It just sort of managed to hit it somehow and killed a lot of people and many of her friends. And there was an image of her on CNN that night, sort of cradling the body of her closest friend in the unit. And when she got back, like a lot of Gulf War veterans, she had a lot of health problems that they've now attributed to something called the Gulf War syndrome. They're still unsure about the cause of it, but she's suffered greatly in terms of loss and continues to suffer health-wise and I think emotionally from her experiences there. And that we wrote that chapter to sort of write this honestly and directly and as we could about the kind of wounds and sense of loss that soldiers suffer and carry with them all their lives.
Yeah, many kinds of wounds. Jeannie, thanks for your call. One more call, about a minute left. Tom in Wanakee. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Kathleen. This is just a follow-up to a caller that asked, what can we do for veterans? And as I told the producer, she should contact county veteran service officers. There's a veteran service officer in every county, and also there's organizations such as Dry Hooch in Madison and Milwaukee that are helping not only Vietnam-era veterans, but more importantly, or most importantly, the returning veterans now that from Iraq and Afghanistan and other more current time of service.
Mark.
Yes, ma'am.
That's good advice, huh?
Yes, it is excellent advice. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having done this. It's a good way to learn history and just to learn. I like learning history through individuals' eyes, and the stories are fascinating, and it's just a very well done book. And thank you, Mark, for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on, Kathleen.
Mark Salter, co-author with John McCain of 13 Soldiers, A Personal History of Americans at War. And Mark is the author of a co-author of Faith of My Fathers. You heard him talk about that and other books written with Senator John McCain, and served on his staff for 18 years. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this interesting show and Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in now very snowy downtown Milwaukee. We told you about the Ferguson decision. Evidently, the word is now that it will be sometime between 5 and 8 tonight that the news about the decision of the grand jury will be announced, just to let you know that. More on news from NPR coming up. We'll be with you again tomorrow from 1 until 3, talking about Jacqueline Kennedy for the second hour of our program tomorrow. Thanks very much for listening. Great conversations ahead on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.